Now, we know you know what day tomorrow is. And while flowers or cards do make perfectly lovely gifts for your Valentine or for yourself, because you know, self-care is important, anyone with a sweet tooth will try and tell you chocolate is the best choice. Now, if your go-to is a Hershey's or other mass-produced bar, no judgment, but you might be missing out on the full range of tastes and aromas that chocolate has to offer. Just trust the experts on this.
Tasting chocolate is a full sensory experience.
That's Simran Sethi. She hosts the Slow Melt podcast, where she explores all things chocolate. And she reports on the latest episode of NPR's Life Kit podcast, which is titled How to Savor Chocolate Like a Cocoa Expert. Sethi says the first step to enjoying chocolate like a pro is picking the right bar.
In a more specialized bar that has something like a 70% cocoa content, you might have just one more ingredient. And what that will do is just give you an extraordinarily powerful tasting experience. And that's when you start to get all the flavors that are available in cocoa. We tend to think about chocolate as one flavor, but it's actually many flavors if we allow it.
Now, if you've only ever had a more traditional candy bar, Sethi recommends starting with a lower cocoa percentage and working your way up. And she says, pay attention to where that chocolate bar came from.
All of the countries where cocoa grows, they express different flavors in cocoa. This is what we call terroir. It's the same thing that we can find in wine, right? A wine from California is very different than a wine from France, for example.
Now, once you've got your bar, Sethi says it's time to engage all five senses. Slowly. Seriously. She says start by inspecting the wrapper with your eyes before moving on to what's inside.
And then what you want to do is start to unwrap it. And you'll get this like explosion of aroma, right? As you bring it towards your nose, it'll all start to, you know, to release.
Next, break off a piece and listen for that satisfying snap sound. Then you can move on to feeling the texture. That's right. Give your chocolate a gentle rub between your fingers.
That's also going to give you a clue as to how it was ground. Perhaps it was ground on stones and it's a little gritty. Maybe it's really soft or silky.
And finally, it's time to eat. But don't rush. Sethi says you want to savor that chocolate.
Let it melt on your tongue, coat the entire inside of your mouth, and just notice. There's going to be something at the beginning, and then you may notice it changes. And what you're actually getting here is it's taste on the tongue, but what's also happening is the retronasal system in the back of the throat where the nose meets the throat, those aromas, those smells are also releasing again. So when we talk about flavor, it's that combination of smell and taste. And notice how it finishes and how long the finish is.
By the way, you don't have to have a fancy artisanal chocolate bar for any of this. Sethi says you can apply all of these tasting principles to any chocolate.
And when you start to really pay attention to not only what your chocolate bar tastes like, but to get curious about where it comes from, how it was made, I assure you, your appreciation for this substance is only going to grow.
That was Simran Sethi. She is the author of Bread, Wine, Chocolate, The Slow Loss of Foods We Love. You can hear her full guide to savoring cocoa like an expert on the latest episode of NPR's Life Kit podcast and at NPR.org. Now, we know you know what day tomorrow is, and while flowers or cards do make perfectly lovely gifts for your Valentine or for yourself, because you know, self-care is important, anyone with a sweet tooth will try and tell you chocolate is the best choice. Now, if your go-to is a Hershey's or other mass-produced bar, no judgment, but you might be missing out on the full range of tastes and aromas that chocolate has to offer. Just trust the experts on this.
Tasting chocolate is a full sensory experience.
That's Simran Sethi. She hosts the Slow Melt podcast, where she explores all things chocolate. And she reports on the latest episode of NPR's Life Kit podcast, which is titled How to Savor Chocolate Like a Cocoa Expert. Sethi says the first step to enjoying chocolate like a pro is picking the right bar.
In a more specialized bar that has something like a 70% cocoa content, you might have just one more ingredient. And what that will do is just give you an extraordinarily powerful tasting experience. And that's when you start to get all the flavors that are available in cocoa. We tend to think about chocolate as one flavor, but it's actually many flavors if we allow it.
Now, if you've only ever had a more traditional candy bar, Satie recommends starting with a lower cocoa percentage and working your way up. And she says, pay attention to where that chocolate bar came from.
All of the countries where cocoa grows, they express different flavors in cocoa. This is what we call terroir. It's the same thing that we can find in wine, right? A wine from California is very different than a wine from France, for example.
Now, once you've got your bar, Satie says it's time to engage all five senses. Slowly. Seriously. She says start by inspecting the wrapper with your eyes before moving on to what's inside.
And then what you want to do is start to unwrap it. And you'll get this like explosion of aroma, right? As you bring it towards your nose, it'll all start to, you know, to release.
Next, break off a piece and listen for that satisfying snap sound. Then you can move on to feeling the texture. That's right. Give your chocolate a gentle rub between your fingers.
That's also going to give you a clue as to how it was ground. Perhaps it was ground on stones and it's a little gritty. Maybe it's really soft or silky.
And finally, it's time to eat. But don't rush. Satie says you want to savor that chocolate.
Let it melt on your tongue, coat the entire inside of your mouth, and just notice. There's going to be something at the beginning, and then you may notice it changes. And what you're actually getting here is it's taste on the tongue, but what's also happening is the retronasal system in the back of the throat where the nose meets the throat, those aromas, those smells are also releasing again. So when we talk about flavor, it's that combination of smell and taste. And notice how it finishes and how long the finish is.
By the way, you don't have to have a fancy artisanal chocolate bar for any of this. Satie says you can apply all of these tasting principles to any chocolate.
And when you start to really pay attention to not only what your chocolate bar tastes like, but to get curious about where it comes from, how it was made, I assure you, your appreciation for this substance is only going to grow.
That was Simran Satie. She is the author of Bread, Wine, Chocolate, The Slow Loss of Foods We Love. You can hear her full guide to savoring cocoa like an expert on the latest episode of NPR's Life Kit podcast and at npr.org. Now, we know you know what day tomorrow is, and while flowers or cards do make perfectly lovely gifts for your Valentine or for yourself, because, you know, self-care is important, anyone with a sweet tooth will try and tell you chocolate is the best choice. Now, if your go-to is a Hershey's or other mass-produced bar, no judgment, but you might be missing out on the full range of tastes and aromas that chocolate has to offer. Just trust the experts on this.
Tasting chocolate is a full sensory experience.
That's Simran Satie. She hosts the Slow Melt podcast, where she explores all things chocolate. And she reports on the latest episode of NPR's Life Kit podcast, which is titled How to Savor Chocolate Like a Cocoa Expert. Satie says the first step to enjoying chocolate like a pro is picking the right bar.
In a more specialized bar that has something like a 70% cocoa content, you might have just one more ingredient. And what that will do is just give you an extraordinarily powerful tasting experience. And that's when you start to get all the flavors that are available in cocoa. We tend to think about chocolate as one flavor, but it's actually many flavors if we allow it.
Now, if you've only ever had a more traditional candy bar, Satie recommends starting with a lower cocoa percentage and working your way up. And she says, pay attention to where that chocolate bar came from.
All of the countries where cocoa grows, they express different flavors in cocoa. This is what we call terroir. It's the same thing that we can find in wine, right? A wine from California is very different than a wine from France, for example.
Now, once you've got your bar, Satie says it's time to engage all five senses. Slowly. Seriously. She says start by inspecting the wrapper with your eyes before moving on to what's inside.
And then what you want to do is start to unwrap it. And you'll get this like explosion of aroma, right? As you bring it towards your nose, it'll all start to, you know, to release.
Next, break off a piece and listen for that satisfying snap sound. Then you can move on to feeling the texture. That's right. Give your chocolate a gentle rub between your fingers.
That's also going to give you a clue as to how it was ground. Perhaps it was ground on stones and it's a little gritty. Maybe it's really soft or silky.
And finally, it's time to eat. But don't rush. Satie says you want to savor that chocolate.
Let it melt on your tongue, coat the entire inside of your mouth, and just notice. There's going to be something at the beginning. And then you may notice it changes. And what you're actually getting here is it's taste on the tongue, but what's also happening is the retronasal system in the back of the throat where the nose meets the throat, those aromas, those smells are also releasing again. So when we talk about flavor, it's that combination of smell and taste. And notice how it finishes and how long the finish is.
By the way, you don't have to have a fancy artisanal chocolate bar for any of this. Satie says you can apply all of these tasting principles to any chocolate.
And when you start to really pay attention to not only what your chocolate bar tastes like, but to get curious about where it comes from, how it was made, I assure you, your appreciation for this substance is only going to grow.
That was Simran Sethi. She is the author of Bread, Wine, Chocolate, The Slow Loss of Foods We Love. You can hear her full guide to savoring cocoa like an expert on the latest episode of NPR's Life Kit podcast and at npr.org.
DeepEnglish.com. People are enamored with music. It touches our souls in profound ways that words alone cannot equal. It stirs our imagination, invigorates our bodies, and transforms our moods. It can lift us up or overwhelm us with emotion. It can make us feel down in the dumps or over the moon. It can pump us up and it can calm us down. Billy Joel, the famous American songwriter and performer, once said, "I think music in itself is healing. It's an explosive expression of humanity. It's something we are all touched by. No matter what culture we're from, everyone loves music. There is no doubt music can indeed heal. People with brain injuries, such as a stroke, for example, have had success with music therapy. It can activate their brain in alternative ways. It often bypasses the damaged areas, allowing people to regain movement or speech. In this way, music actually changes the structure of the brain. It gives people new chances to move and speak. Also, studies have shown that music therapy can lower the stress hormone cortisol. It can also increase the pleasure hormone dopamine. It can improve heart and breathing rates, as well as anxiety and pain in cancer patients. In the field of psychology, music has been used to help people suffering from depression and sadness. Also, for children with developmental disabilities, music can be healing. Therapist Yvonne Russell has seen firsthand the power of music to heal the elderly. Henry, an old man, was living in a nursing home. Like some people his age, Henry was suffering from dementia. He forgot things easily and has lost many of his mental abilities. In fact, Henry lived in his own world, often unresponsive to other people. But when Yvonne gave him an iPod with his favorite blast from the past, he instantly began to sing and sway to the music. His lifeless face became transformed with energy. His eyes came alive with emotion as he listened to music. While he was mostly mute for years, after listening to music, he was suddenly able to shoot the breeze with the people around him. Music breathed life into his body and mind. According to neurologist Dr. Oliver Sacks, Henry is restored to himself. He has remembered who he is and has reacquired his identity for a while through the power of music.
DeepEnglish.com.
People are enamored with music. It touches our souls in profound ways that words alone cannot equal. It stirs our imagination, invigorates our bodies, and transforms our moods. It can lift us up or overwhelm us with emotion. It can make us feel down in the dumps or over the moon. It can pump us up and it can calm us down. Billy Joel, the famous American songwriter and performer, once said, "I think music in itself is healing. It's an explosive expression of humanity. It's something we are all touched by. No matter what culture we're from, everyone loves music." There is no doubt music can indeed heal. People with brain injuries, such as a stroke, for example, have had success with music therapy. It can activate their brain in alternative ways. It often bypasses the damaged areas, allowing people to regain movement or speech. In this way, music actually changes the structure of the brain. It gives people new chances to move and speak. Also, studies have shown that music therapy can lower the stress hormone cortisol. It can also increase the pleasure hormone dopamine. It can improve heart and breathing rates, as well as anxiety and pain in cancer patients. In the field of psychology, music has been used to help people suffering from depression and sadness. Also, for children with developmental disabilities, music can be healing. Therapist Yvonne Russell has seen firsthand the power of music to heal the elderly. Henry, an old man, was living in a nursing home. Like some people his age, Henry was suffering from dementia. He forgot things easily and has lost many of his mental abilities. In fact, Henry lived in his own world, often unresponsive to other people. But when Yvonne gave him an iPod with his favorite blast from the past, he instantly began to sing and sway to the music. His lifeless face became transformed with energy. His eyes came alive with emotion as he listened to music. While he was mostly mute for years, after listening to music, he was suddenly able to shoot the breeze with the people around him. Music breathed life into his body and mind. According to neurologist Dr. Oliver Sacks, Henry is restored to himself. He has remembered who he is and has reacquired his identity for a while through the power of music.
Thank you.
deepenglish.com. People are enamored with music. It touches our souls in profound ways that words alone cannot equal. It stirs our imagination, invigorates our bodies, and transforms our moods. It can lift us up or overwhelm us with emotion. It can make us feel down in the dumps or over the moon. It can pump us up and it can calm us down. Billy Joel, the famous American songwriter and performer, once said, "I think music in itself is healing. It's an explosive expression of humanity. It's something we are all touched by. No matter what culture we're from, everyone loves music. There is no doubt music can indeed heal. People with brain injuries, such as a stroke, for example, have had success with music therapy. It can activate their brain in alternative ways. It often bypasses the damaged areas, allowing people to regain movement or speech. In this way, music actually changes the structure of the brain. It gives people new chances to move and speak. Also, studies have shown that music therapy can lower the stress hormone cortisol. It can also increase the pleasure hormone dopamine. It can improve heart and breathing rates, as well as anxiety and pain in cancer patients. In the field of psychology, music has been used to help people suffering from depression and sadness. Also, for children with developmental disabilities, music can be healing. Therapist Yvonne Russell has seen firsthand the power of music to heal the elderly. Henry, an old man, was living in a nursing home. Like some people his age, Henry was suffering from dementia. He forgot things easily and has lost many of his mental abilities. In fact, Henry lived in his own world, often unresponsive to other people. But when Yvonne gave him an iPod with his favorite blast from the past, he instantly began to sing and sway to the music. His lifeless face became transformed with energy. His eyes came alive with emotion as he listened to music. While he was mostly mute for years, after listening to music, he was suddenly able to shoot the breeze with the people around him. Music breathed life into his body and mind. According to neurologist Dr. Oliver Sacks, Henry is restored to himself. He has remembered who he is and has reacquired his identity for a while through the power of music.
Aloha, bonjour, ciao, ni hao, hola, yasu, zdravo. With more than 7,000 distinct languages spoken around the world, there are a lot of different ways you can say hello. But wouldn't it be easier to just have one? what's the use in talking if we can't understand each other? You say tomato, I say tomato. Let's just call the whole thing off. This is What If, and here's what would happen if all humans spoke the same language. In September 2019, the Merriam-Webster English Dictionary added 530 new words to its collection that now totals roughly 470,000 words. Needless to say, language, all languages, are always evolving. How could they not? 100 years ago, words like online and video didn't exist. Today, here you are watching one. But evolving and merging mean two different things. And it would take a lot more than changing times to get us all speaking the same language. But is it still possible? There would be more than a few issues involved with choosing one language for everyone to speak. Who would want to give up their mother tongue? Our native language is more than just a means of communication. It's a link to our personal identity. And if we were to force everyone to choose one existing language over another, it would not only spark a lot of tension, it could put millions, if not billions, of people at a severe disadvantage. Let's put this conundrum into context. The English language is spoken in more than 100 countries, making it the world's most universal language. But with 1.1 billion speakers, Mandarin is the most spoken language in the world. So, how would you choose? In 1887, Dr. Ludwig Zamenhof invented Esperanto, which he believed could be adopted as an international language. Zamenhof grew up in Bialystok, Poland, which was home to a multi-ethnic mixture of Poles, Russians, Jews, Lithuanians, and Germans. Zamenhof believed he could promote trust and build community amongst the diverse population by creating a new language that everyone could speak. But since Esperanto was never adopted by any political or economic superpower, it failed to live up to Zamenhof's expectations. Nonetheless, more than 2 million people in 120 countries now speak Esperanto, making it the most commonly used constructed language. So, if we had to choose a neutral language for everyone to adopt, Esperanto would be the likeliest contender. But feel free to make the case for Klingon or Elvish. Even if the world did share a single language, there'd still be plenty of misunderstandings because it's not such a small world after all. Since the first human migrations, we've settled all over the place, evolving in different climates, relying on different foods, and building economies on different resources. These divergent experiences formed unique cultures and customs, which don't always translate so easily. So, while we could all adopt... Aloha, bonjour, ciao, ni hao, hola, yasu, zdravo. With more than 7,000 distinct languages spoken around the world, there are a lot of different ways you can say hello. But wouldn't it be easier to just have one? What's the use in talking if we can't understand each other? You say tomato, I say tomato. Let's just call the whole thing off. This is What If, and here's what would happen if all humans spoke the same language. In September 2019, the Merriam-Webster English Dictionary added 530 new words to its collection that now totals roughly 470,000 words. Needless to say, language, all languages, are always evolving. How could they not? 100 years ago, words like online and video didn't exist. Today, here you are watching one. But evolving and merging mean two different things. And it would take a lot more than changing times to get us all speaking the same language. But is it still possible? There would be more than a few issues involved with choosing one language for everyone to speak. Who would want to give up their mother tongue? Our native language is more than just a means of communication. It's a link to our personal identity. And if we were to force everyone to choose one existing language over another, it would not only spark a lot of tension, it could put millions, if not billions, of people at a severe disadvantage. Let's put this conundrum into context. The English language is spoken in more than 100 countries, making it the world's most universal language. But with 1.1 billion speakers, Mandarin is the most spoken language in the world. So, how would you choose? In 1887, Dr. Ludwig Zamenhof invented Esperanto, which he believed could be adopted as an international language.
Zamenhof grew up in Bialystok, Poland, which was home to a multi-ethnic mixture of Poles, Russians, Jews, Lithuanians, and Germans. Zamenhof believed he could promote trust and build community amongst the diverse population by creating a new language that everyone could speak. But since Esperanto was never adopted by any political or economic superpower, it failed to live up to Zamenhof's expectations. Nonetheless, more than 2 million people in 120 countries now speak Esperanto, making it the most commonly used constructed language. So, if we had to choose a neutral language for everyone to adopt, Esperanto would be the likeliest contender. But feel free to make the case for Klingon or Elvish. Even if the world did share a single language, there'd still be plenty of misunderstandings because it's not such a small world after all. Since the first human migrations, we've settled all over the place, evolving in different climates, relying on different foods, and building economies on different resources. These divergent experiences formed unique cultures and customs, which don't always translate so easily. So, while we could all adopt...
Aloha, bonjour, ciao, ni hao, hola, yasu, zdravo.
With more than 7,000 distinct languages spoken around the world, there are a lot of different ways you can say hello. But wouldn't it be easier to just have one? What's the use in talking if we can't understand each other? You say tomato, I say tomato. Let's just call the whole thing off. This is What If. And here's what would happen if all humans spoke the same language. In September 2019, the Merriam-Webster English Dictionary added 530 new words to its collection that now totals roughly 470,000 words. Needless to say, language, all languages, are always evolving. How could they not? 100 years ago, words like online and video didn't exist. Today, here you are watching one. But evolving and merging mean two different things. And it would take a lot more than changing times to get us all speaking the same language. But is it still possible? There would be more than a few issues involved with choosing one language for everyone to speak. Who would want to give up their mother tongue? Our native language is more than just a means of communication. It's a link to our personal identity. And if we were to force everyone to choose one existing language over another, it would not only spark a lot of tension, it could put millions, if not billions, of people at a severe disadvantage. Let's put this conundrum into context. The English language is spoken in more than 100 countries, making it the world's most universal language. But with 1.1 billion speakers, Mandarin is the most spoken language in the world. So, how would you choose? In 1887, Dr. Ludwig Zamenhof invented Esperanto, which he believed could be adopted as an international language. Zamenhof grew up in Bialystok, Poland, which was home to a multi-ethnic mixture of Poles, Russians, Jews, Lithuanians, and Germans. Zamenhof believed he could promote trust and build community amongst the diverse population by creating a new language that everyone could speak. But since Esperanto was never adopted by any political or economic superpower, it failed to live up to Zamenhof's expectations. Nonetheless, more than 2 million people in 120 countries now speak Esperanto, making it the most commonly used constructed language. So, if we had to choose a neutral language for everyone to adopt, Esperanto would be the likeliest contender. But feel free to make the case for Klingon or Elvish. Even if the world did share a single language, there'd still be plenty of misunderstandings because it's not such a small world after all. Since the first human migrations, we've settled all over the place, evolving in different climates, relying on different foods, and building economies on different resources. These divergent experiences formed unique cultures and customs, which don't always translate so easily. So, while we could all adopt...